Hey, thanks so much for listening to this message. My name is Jason, and I'm one of the ministers here at the Madison Church of Christ. It's our hope and prayer that the teaching you hear today will bless your life and draw you closer to God. If you're ever in the Madison area, we'd love for you to stop by and study the Bible with us on Sundays at 5 p.m. or Wednesdays at 7 p.m. If you have questions about the Bible or want to know more about the Madison Church, you can find us online at madisonchurch.org. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, as well as our sermons podcast, Madison Church of Christ Sermons. Thanks again for stopping by. I hope this study is a blessing to you.
But I wanted to, as we start class, just thank everybody again. It's been almost a full year that we've been in here. We took, you know, the summer quarter off, but it's two quarters. We've averaged roughly a chapter a night for most of the year, and so tonight we actually have three chapters. We're going to finish up 26, 27, 28. If we don't finish it, please go home and read it. I wanted to tell y'all from myself and for Robert teaching the class, and I think the guys that have helped me would agree, teaching the class, and I don't even want to call it teaching, whatever we do up here, is very, very uplifting to us. It really, really energizes us to come in here and be with y'all and study the Word. And I'm going to tell you why. The reason is when I look around this room, I see a complete cross section of this congregation. I see, younger members of the church, and I see older members of the church. And the thing that several of us have talked about, even outside of the class, I've never been in a class this long where nobody made a bad comment. There hasn't been a single time that we've talked about a scripture where anybody has said anything that was off topic, off the wall, weird, or even silly. It's all been on point. And so I wanted to say to you guys have something to say. Okay? Do not be afraid to leave this room, and when you're at work, when you're in the grocery store, wherever, do not shy away from biblical conversations. And I'm not going to say spiritual conversations. I'm going to say biblical conversations, okay? Because it's clear to me that this group can have those kind of discussions. We've been doing it for a year, and it's amazing. And I know I'm not the only one that feels that way. I've talked to a lot of different people about the class. And I just want to encourage all of y'all, when you leave here, like I said, talk about these things. Talk about Scripture. Talk about it at work, wherever you are. Don't shy away from it. And every single one of y'all in here, okay, our education committee needs people to teach. We need people to teach the little ones. And we need people to teach the big ones, okay? And everybody in here can do that, okay? And I want to encourage y'all to do that. Get involved and do that. And I'm going to be honest, and this is going out on the internet too, okay? I wouldn't say that to every class I've taught, okay? But to this class, absolutely, okay? You have something to say, so go say it, okay? Before we jump in, any comments about any of that or anything?
I'll just say it's a testament to the fact that you guys have been studying God's Word, you know, and you have a great interest in it, and that is wonderful.
I mean,
that's awesome. That's what we need.
That was when we started this class back in whatever January, February, whenever we did. That was one of the things Robert and I talked about. We hoped that out of this people would want to study the Bible. And Brent, you've made an excellent point. Clearly, you guys have studied. Okay, if not specifically for this class, at some point you had studied. Okay, because everybody was right with everything that we were covering, and it really, for me personally, has been a massive encouragement to know. And there's, I don't know, between 40 and 50 people, I think, here tonight. And that's a massive encouragement to know that we could have 40, 50 people here talking about, weighty matters, and we're all on the same page. It's just honestly a massive encouragement. So I thank you all. So we're gonna pick up in chapter 26. Now we're not gonna go back to the subject we ended on last week, but we are gonna start. If you'll remember, and we're not gonna be able to cover every single verse like we usually do, but if you'll remember, we had gotten to the point where they were in the Garden of Gethsemane, and Jesus is going to be betrayed. And we got down to the point where he's about to be betrayed. We went on kind of a tangent there. And I know normally I say I don't want to jump back and forth between different scriptures. But if somebody can, turn over to John chapter 18, verses 6 and 7. And this is something, I was telling Brent this beforehand, and this was something that Craig Beal pointed out to me a few years ago. Again, I've read, you know, these the account of Jesus' arrest and crucifixion multiple times, and for some reason I never zeroed in on this particular piece. So we're in the same the John's account is the same story, right? John was there, okay? So John would have been a firsthand witness of this. And somebody read verses 6 and 7.
When he said to them, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground.
Is that it, or is there more?
That's six.
Okay, what does 7 say?
Therefore he asked them, "Whom do you seek?" And they said, "Jesus the Nazarene."
Okay, so the part that was interesting to me was that it says they drew back and they fell down. Okay, now this is another one of those cases where we don't know exactly what was going on, but as I read it, I would probably say it seems to me that it knocked them down, right? He said, "I'm the one you're looking for," or "I am he," and it knocked them down, okay? And the reason I bring that up is we've talked in this class before about, in particular, with evangelism and why don't people believe, and Brent and I were talking about this before. So when we get in chapter 26 down to verse 51, verse 51 in Matthew now says, "And behold, one of those who were with Jesus reached and drew his sword and struck the slave of the high priest and cut off his ear. Then Jesus said to him, 'Put your sword back in its place, for all those who take up the sword will perish by the sword. Or do you think that I cannot appeal to my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels?' How then would the scriptures be fulfilled?" And, okay, I thought it was in Matthew. It's not. But we know from other scripture that what did he do with the ear that was cut off? He healed it. Okay.
It's interesting that Luke, the doctor, points that
that's
out.
That's a good point, yeah.
His verse.
Yeah. So Trey Westmoreland's not in here, is he? So Trey Westmoreland, there's another little interesting, it's a tangent that I'm going to bring up, and that is a lot of people, it was Peter, we know from other accounts, it was Peter that struck him, and a lot of people say Peter was left-handed because it was the guy's right ear, right? Because can you face me?
Yeah.
If I'm right-handed and I go to hit you, which ear am I going to get? I'm going to get his left ear. If I'm left-handed and I go, it's going to get his right ear. So there's a lot of people that think Peter was left-handed or a horrendous aim. He was a fisherman with a sword, right? So that's neither here nor there. But here's where I'm going. So in these seconds or minutes from the crowd, and it said it was a large crowd that comes to get Jesus, what have they seen? They've seen a man say three words and knock a crowd down. They've seen a man lose an ear and somebody, and that same man, pick the ear up and put it back on his head, and they still arrested him. Is that something you would do? I would hope that I would see this and I'd be like, I don't think I'm going to arrest him tonight, right? But they still did. Does anybody else find that strange? Any thoughts there?
I
Brent?
I think it's interesting thinking about Peter, you know, and what preceded all this, because they'd had the Lord's Supper. Jesus had told them, hey, look, you're all going to forsake me. You're going to fall away. And they said, oh, no, not me, you know, and Peter vehemently denied it, and all the rest of them join in. And, you know, and then after that, not in Matthew, but one of the other accounts, they go into this discussion about who's the greatest among them, you know, which is kind of interesting. And then they go out to the garden, and, you know, you have the whole scene with Jesus praying and them just falling asleep. You know, it's like, what were they thinking? You know, what was going through their mind? And then you have this confrontation scene, and Peter apparently thinks, well, this is it. This is when the kingdom's going to come. We're going to fight the Romans, because there were a lot of Roman guards there, and move on. And it's just interesting to me, if you put yourself in the disciples' heads, trying to figure out what were they thinking, you know, did they finally, they still didn't get it, did they, you know? And this crowd comes, and they see the things that we just talked about. And why did they not believe, you know? I mean, how could they look at this and think that, you know, I think the only thing that allows them to proceed with the arrest is Jesus basically rebuking Peter and saying, put the sword away. We're not going to do that, you know. This is so the scriptures will be fulfilled.
Yes.
I think part of Peter's confusion came from what Luke reported before they went to the garden. Jesus told them, if you don't have a sword, some of you both can do this. The disciples said, we have two swords here. And he said, that's enough. So in his mind, it's like, okay, it's time.
Yeah.
Let's use the sword. So,
right.
I mean, Jesus had just talked about, get a sword.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I think where I go to is it had to be just such a chaotic, you know, week. Because to your point, he said, take the swords, and then he's telling them to put them up. And then I liked what Brent said. They didn't get it. And where did we start in verse 2? You remember we talked about this last week, that he, you know, this is almost, it was very direct, right? He looked right at him and said, you know that in 2 days is the Passover, and they're going to crucify me, right? And they, to your point, they still didn't get it. So I don't know that I have any answer there. I'm just saying I can't imagine the inner turmoil of the disciples and the apostles as they're going through this.
Yeah, and so, it's real easy to look at them and think, oh, I wouldn't do that. But
yeah.
That's absolutely the wrong thing to say, because who knows? I might not have been as courageous as Peter or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
I think they had in their mind, and I think all of us, somebody attacked us, we would try to protect ourselves. But Jesus kind of stopped them and said, don't try to fight them. Just let them do what they're going to do. So I think they're confused there and said, they don't know what to do now. Because their normal response is to attack or fight back or something like that. And Jesus says, no, just let them take me, basically. And they're really confused about it. And so they're kind of standing there and says, what am I going to do? I don't know what to do right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Norm.
Especially Jesus saying, don't fight for me, because you're going to inhibit God's plan. And I've got tasks to fulfill yet that I just talked to you about. So these people are coming to me. I'm going to go fulfill my task. So don't stop these men from doing what they are here to do. Maybe he gave them the sword to protect themselves because he wasn't supposed to lose one of them. But I don't know about that. But I, you know, it seems like Jesus is not wanting them to fight for him.
Right. Right. And I also think it's, did you have?
I'll go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No. Please. I was going to jump back a little bit.
Go ahead, because I forgot what I was going to say.
If you think about the preceding week, all that had happened, you know, Jesus had come in with a triumphal entry. All the people were praising him. He'd gone to the temple. He cleaned it out, made a, you know, big scene. He was daily in the temple teaching, and the scribes and or the Pharisees and the elders the leaders were too scared to, he'd silenced them all. They were too scared to arrest him at that point. So the disciples were probably thinking, you know, hey, I'm on the right side here. You know, we're gonna move out. This is the time. You know, and then Jesus just kind of cuts it off there.
Yeah,
you know, and it's interesting what happens in verse 56. Verse that.
Yeah, I was gonna, and I'm gonna break my own rule. I'm gonna jump back to. I think another thing that I think about that is interesting to me all the way back to verse 42, where Jesus is praying and he's asking if there's any other way, you know, I don't want to do this. And I think to me that is interesting because Jesus was God. He knew the glory of God. He knew what was coming next after death. He knew what was coming. And yet he still didn't want to do it. And to me, this is kind of along your lines of what you were saying, Brent. Sometimes we're hard on these characters, you know, in the Bible. Like that, you should have a spiritual mindset. But here is, you know, God in flesh, and he doesn't want to go through the pain. And to me, that says, we need to be careful. We shouldn't discount at times our earthly pain. And I'm not necessarily talking about emotional pain. I'm talking about physical pain and the whole physical aspect of our being. If it was to a point where God incarnate did not want to go through it, it's significant, right? That's just my opinion. But at any rate, you want to jump down to verse 56?
Yeah, and that's where, you know, after all this takes place, and the last part of that verse says, then all the disciples left him and fled, you know, and of course, that very night it said, we'll never do that, you know, including Peter. And it's interesting as you go through the rest of the story, you don't hear any more about any of them except John and Peter. The rest of them are just totally gone, and of course, John and Peter are hanging back too, so.
Yeah.
I don't want to jump ahead, but.
So we can move on because we've got about 15 more minutes and we need to at least hit a little bit of 27, 28. Any other thoughts there before we jump into chapter 27?
Just real quick.
Yeah.
You mentioned, you know, how hard it would be for those guys to continue to arrest Jesus. And I think about that one guy specifically that had his ear cut off. He looked at his ear on the ground and saw Jesus pick it up and put it back on. I don't know if it was completely healed or if it had a scar or what, but you would imagine he would remember that for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
And possibly be changed. And, you know, the Bible is full of Jesus healed, but thought comes to mind is, you know, we are healed spiritually, and has that changed us? Do we think about that like that guy would think about?
Yeah.
And tell people about it like, hey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was, yeah.
So, I don't want to be too hard on the disciples for fleeing, but I mean, Jesus warned about his crucifixion and impending death, right? He never told them necessarily, or at least I'm not seeing it, maybe I missed it, but what they're supposed to do during the time that he's arrested or detained or about to be crucified, right?
No. No, when you think about it, he'd actually told Peter, your death's not going to be so pleasant either, you know. So again, I think, you know, it's a chapter there, chapter 26, and we can read it and we can talk about it in 25 minutes. But it's when you think about those events unfolding, it was really messy. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, we think it's, oh, he pulled a sword and he cut the guy's ear. Nah, it was probably, right, they had soldiers with him. So when he started fighting, those soldiers probably started reacting. And when you cut somebody's ear off, there's a lot of blood vessels and stuff here. It was probably a pretty gruesome scene. And again, I think it's also interesting that in the midst of that, you know, Jesus is able to get control of the situation, heal this guy, and say, let them do what they're going to do. You know, it's... I find as I get older, I really do think about not so much what the disciples were doing, but the guys that saw this, the angry mob, right, that's watching this, and then they go, yeah, okay, we're going to keep going. So anyway, let's jump into chapter 27. Now, chapter 27, let's see, we get in and we start to see that they now are going to, they've taken him in front of the governor. They've decided they are going to put him to death. And then we see that Judas, in verse 3, sees that he's been condemned, and he returned the 30 pieces of silver, and he takes the 30 pieces of silver, and he threw the silver at the chief priest. Again, I know everybody in class knows this. Chief priest took the money, and they would not put it in the temple treasury because they said it was money paid for blood, and they bought the potter's field. Let's see, if you want, jump in anywhere. I'm just kind of trying to skim through it.
Yeah, one thing that strikes me when you first start 27 is the chief priests and the elders were trying to put Jesus to death. And normally when the Jews did that, what do? They would just gather a mob, get a bunch of stones, and have at it, right?
Yeah.
But they don't do that in this case, you know. And I guess, what are your thoughts on why not? Why do they go to the Romans to do their dirty work this time, if you will? Any thoughts on that?
How many times did he slip away?
Yep.
He slipped away, what, two or three times in the book of John?
Maybe that's it. One of the reasons I think is because there were a lot of people that were hanging on all of Jesus' words that believed in him, and I think they were afraid of a riot as well. And the Romans, I'm sure, weren't operating in a vacuum. They knew what was going on. So I just thought that's interesting, because when you get over into Acts, you know, Stephen gets up there and he doesn't get the same treatment. He gets stoned right there on the spot.
Part of it could be they knew their own motives too. As opposed to, you know, having a murderer or somebody that they really knew he was guilty. Verse 18 says they were doing all of this out of envy.
Yeah, I mean, it was really, I mean, we look at it from a, I'm going to say, spiritual and religious standpoint, but for them, it was a political assassination is what it was. Because, and back to your point, I think, is well made, the Jews had been trying to figure out how to kill him, and they weren't having much success, and so they, you know, to your point, too, they thought, well, we don't want a riot. We want to make sure the Romans are behind him, because this guy is saying he's the king of the Jews, so let's go get him. You know, it was not, they weren't looking at it as a religious or spiritual thing. It was political assassination for them.
They needed a bigger scale to kill his following all the way around.
Yes.
Also, the fact that the Romans took a dim view of the local authorities taking that kind of power into their hands, because the Romans held that power of life and death over everybody in that area or across the Roman Empire. And so, if the Jews who were in the council wound up killing Jesus and the Romans found out about it, then they would be next in line.
Yes. So we're gonna keep on going through here. In chapter 27, we know Jesus goes before Pilate. Again, this is one I'm going to encourage you guys. Go read all the different accounts of Pilate. To me, a really interesting character. A really interesting character because of the things he said. And then I do think it's interesting if you look in verse 19 there that Jesus is there with Pilate, and what happens? Pilate's wife sends him a message and says, see that you have nothing to do with that righteous man. And she says, for last night I suffered greatly in a dream because of him. And then it goes on to then get into the story of Barabbas. And again, you know, as we've talked about, the crowd, I believe, no scriptural example or no scriptural call out here, the same crowd or some of the same crowd that was shouting for him during the triumphal entry. Now they're screaming to crucify him. And that's 7 days, right?
It's interesting, too. You know, we talk about how that it was envy that caused the Jewish leaders to do it. And Pilate knew that. It says that in verse 18. He knew it was because of envy that they handed him over. And I think that's probably why he was like, well, you really want to do this? How about I give you Barabbas instead?
Yeah. Yeah. And then, as we've been talking about, if you look in verse 24 through 26, it also mentions what Brent was talking about. What does Pilate see happening? You know, yeah, he's starting to see a riot. And so one of the things that's interesting about Pilate, was Pilate really for Jesus? No. Was he against Jesus? No. Who was Pilate in it for? Pilate. Right, he was in it for Pilate. And then you see that in verse 24. But again, I encourage everybody, go read the different gospel accounts, you know, put it together of what Pilate was going for, or what he was saying, what he was doing. In some ways, I find the story of Pilate very, very tragic, because it seems like he was real close. He was real close, but he could not let go of the power that he thought he had, okay? Next section, we get into Jesus being mocked, where they're, you know, mockingly call him the king of the Jews. They're beating him, those sorts of things. You know, the other thing, again, I'm going to jump accounts here. It doesn't get into this. The one that is always stuck in my mind is when they would hit him and then say, "Who hit you?" And to me, the thing that is shocking, right? Jesus could have just looked up and said, "You hit me," and that person dropped dead. I think about Ananias and Sapphira, right? And how they died, and the restraint there. Not only did he have the ability to do it, he had the right to do it, and he didn't, you know? And again, I apologize. I know I'm jumping over to other narratives, but that's one of the things that's always stood out to me when you look at the crucifixion. Maybe I'm weird. Yeah, it's horrible. They put him to death, but the whole thing of how they mocked him beforehand. It wasn't enough to just kill him. We're gonna degrade him, right?
And that's not the first round. I mean, he already
Yes.
through that with the Jewish leaders. You know, they spit on him and everything else, beat him with their fists. Then the Romans get their turn.
We're quickly running out of time. Let's see. Then we get into, I'm trying to hit the high points. We get into the actual story of the crucifixion. And, you know, this again, if you look at verses 39 and 40, again, to me, what are they saying to him in verse 40? They're mocking him, and they are saying, "You who are going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself." Now, let's think back a couple of chapters. Who was Jesus saying that to? When Jesus said that back a couple of chapters, do you remember who it said he was saying it to?
Well, and did he say he was going to destroy the temple?
No, that's a good point. That's a good point.
He said he would rebuild it, but he just said, "Destroy this temple, and I'll rebuild it." I didn't mean to.
No. Very good point
there. But
no, very
I
good point.
That was interesting. I'd never noticed that before until I was looking at this.
But who did he say that to when he said it? It was the disciples, right? So again, to me, this indicates there were people that had been with him, and not only did some of them forsake him, and we know Judas turned on him, but then some of the other followers turned on him as well, right? They're there mocking him. As well.
I think they probably just expected that he wouldn't allow that to happen to himself, and then they felt betrayed that, you know,
yeah,
that he'd been fooling us the whole time. That's the only thing I can think of why they would get to that point.
Yeah, absolutely. The only other point I'll make here in 27, and you can, if you've got other items, You guys have probably heard me say this before. You know, we focus a lot on Jesus here. As after I had children, I can't imagine the restraint of God the Father to not say, "Nah, I'm not doing that," because I will tell you, as a father, I understand being able to lay down your life for somebody else. But if you said one of my kids, not a chance, not a chance. And I that's something I thought about it as I studied for tonight. The restraint of God the Father to allow His one and only Son to go through that for us. That's amazing to me.
Brent? Yeah, and on the other side, Jesus knowing that the Father could have done that, and He turned away, you know. And so it was just Jesus Himself. He was all alone there.
I think that separation was worse than the physical pain. I think that's what He was dreading most in the garden. Never been apart from
Him. That's true.
For eternity.
Dave?
Yeah.
There's several prophecies fulfilled here from Psalms 22. And you can go back and find them just one by one. But the one that's just kind of the unusual terminology to me is from Matthew 27:39, where He says, "Those who pass by deride Him, wagging their heads." It's kind of a weird phrase there. But Psalms 22 says the exact, I'm trying to find the verse now, as a minute ago. But it says the exact same thing. They whack their heads.
Yeah.
But there's several others in there. That one's word for word.
And how long was the, you said that's Psalms, right?
Yeah, 22 verse 7 says, "All who see me mock me, they make mouths at me, they wag their heads."
So I'm going to appeal to two or three men in here that I think will know the answer. I think I may know the answer. But I'm thinking David may know and Siegfried may know. How many years, roughly, between Psalms and crucifixion? That's what I was going to say. I was thinking it was about 800 to 1,000, because it was roughly 400, 400, 400. So somewhere between 800 to 1,000 years. And it's interesting, and thank you, Roger, interesting, like you said, that prophecy had that. So we've got about 2 minutes left. We're going to jump over. Again, we're in chapter 28. Again, I know everybody knows these stories here, knows the scriptures here. So 28, it gets into the account of Jesus being risen. So it's after the Sabbath. It's dawn. There's been an earthquake. The women go to attend to the body, and they see that the angel of the Lord is sitting there. You have the story of the guards who have been, I don't know what happened to them, but it says it's like they're dead. And then they get to those men and they bribe them and tell them that somebody came and stole the body. And then at the end, Jesus has appeared to the remaining 11 apostles, and He gives them the Great Commission. Any thoughts there, Brent? Any?
Anything to add at this point?
Okay. And again, we moved quickly through this. I do think this is a section of scripture that everybody in this class knows, and you know, not a whole lot of debate or anything there. Okay, any thoughts before we close out class tonight? Yeah.
So when we talk about John 18:6, mm-hmm. the I am He, I think He was declaring His eternalness, because they always have referred to God as the great I am.
Yeah.
And He was saying, I am.
I wondered about that, and I wanted to go back and study.
The Psalms
and
number for it is 15:10.
Okay.
And it says that it includes His eternality.
Okay. I had wondered that. I didn't get around to figuring that out, but I wondered about that. To me, it's callback all the way to Moses, right? I am, mm-hmm. You know. But yeah.
He's saying He's part of God, and then He did a miracle.
Yeah.
He was trying to let those people know, you're doing this to God.
Yeah. And so again, they saw it. They had undisputed evidence, and they still did it. All right, any other thoughts before we close out?
Just a comment on the big picture of Matthew. It starts out, chapter 1, saying, naming Jesus, he will save his people from their sins when he came to earth. And then it ends with him turning that mission. He did his part. He turned that mission over to his disciples and told them how to complete the mission.
Okay, any other closing thoughts there? Okay, thanks everyone and everyone online. Have a good evening.